Are you sick of those damn political crusaders? The anti-libertarian Libertarian Party? Sick of the violence and coercion that makes up the statist servile society with seemingly no escape? Are you looking for real practical solutions to increase your personal freedom and your invulnerability to coercion? If so, kick off your shoes, come inside the polyethylene A-tent, and let's talk Vanu. Join your hosts, Shane and Kyle, as they further explore this freedom strategy and develop it into the modern day. You're listening to the Vanu Podcast.
And welcome to the Vanu Podcast, the podcast making you invulnerable to coercion. I'm Shane and...
I'm Kyle. Ooh, yeah.
Since governments are the primary coercers upon individuals, this podcast and everything found on the website is covered by a BIPCOTS of no government license. This allows reuse and modification to anyone except for governments and the bludgies thereof. You can learn more at BIPCOT.org. So Kyle, it's great to have you back. How are things going?
Well, it's been very turbulent. Even more so than usual. The short version is that I have a very real possibility of going full time with my one employer. So there's that. And things at the warehouse have really kind of taken a nosedive. Whatever hard won autonomy I've enjoyed is gone now completely. And it's interesting too. It wasn't anything targeted against me personally. All of the grunts were essentially really reined in pretty tightly in preparation for the new bureaucrat or whatever, who, of course, is former military, of course. And it's like, oh, geez, we went through this already like last year, earlier last year or so. I don't know. It's kind of like, you know, for some reason he treats lower management like trash, but whenever he, you know, sees me working, like he's like happy to see me. I don't know him very well. It's not like we've had lengthy discussions of any real sense. I think the last thing he said to me was, thank you so much for working. And I said, sure, you too. You know, we've never had like a normal conversation of really any kind, even about, you know, business as it were. So I don't know. It's just, I mean, to be perfectly frank, I don't want to work there anymore. And that was the other part of the crackdown. Remember that whole gray market thing I told you about, getting the free food that was earmarked for the homeless and such?
Yeah, I think you mentioned something about that in the last podcast we recorded. Yeah, that kind of got shut down, huh?
Yeah, and that seems to be ongoing. So this doesn't seem to be like a temporary halt like what happened, which has happened at least twice before. This very well may be the new normal. And that's kind of what made working there kind of worth it, because then you save the money and the groceries you didn't have to buy and all that. And now that that's not a possibility anymore, you know, I need to start looking elsewhere. But then again, kind of like old man Rayo said, you know, opportunities change, right?
Right. Yeah. I definitely get that. So, I guess, nothing really new on my front, still doing the same old stuff. But I guess there is one thing I could mention, Kyle. Now, as we said before, we have a natural monopoly on the subject of Vanu, which means that this is the only podcast out there to obtain this sort of information. Is one episode a week not enough for your Vanu fix? If the answer to that question is no, I've got good news for you. Every week or so, Jason Booth and I get together to record bonus episodes for our subscribers on Patreon. There are three out right now, with many more coming in the future. So here's what we have out thus far. The first one, Buy Spy, Tips for Staying Free and Effective. Jason and I cover an article from Self-Liberation Notes on, how to stay free and effective in this individual pursuit of freedom. In other words, security culture. The second one, Retreatism and the Freedom That Matters. In this one, Jason and I cover an article by Adam Reed. Herein, Adam tries to determine when it will be worthy for someone to pursue such a radical lifestyle as Rayo did, and quite frankly, it comes down to a cost-benefit analysis. And Adam definitely does bring up some very good points. Number three, Vanu Then and Now. It's far easier to pursue Venuans today than it was when Rayo did it. In this episode, Jason and I compare and contrast various aspects of Evani lifestyle then and now, and this definitely was one of my favorite Patreon exclusives thus far. So really, really terrific episode. So to get access to these bonus shows and more, become a subscriber for as little as $2 a month by visiting patreon.com/Vanu. Once we reach our first goal of $50, we'll start looking into merchandise and, I guess, memorabilia and such. And obviously, our subscribers will have first dibs. Again, that's patreon.com/Vanu. We'd certainly love to have you on board. And thanks to those who already are. We greatly, greatly appreciate it. So this episode is number 36 of the Vanu podcast, and is titled Financial Independence, Starting a Lifestyle Business. The show notes can be found at vanupodcast.com/36. This is definitely something Rayo did not bring up as a path to financial independence, and that's quite understandable. As we've discussed before, the internet opens seemingly endless doors for the modern-day Vanuan, especially in regards to financial independence. So last week, we discussed freelancing and unjobbing. Another great way to quit the rat race, and maybe the second step after unjobbing, is to start a lifestyle business. So Kyle, anything before we get moving forward?
No, let's get on cracking.
All right, so the only definition we have this evening is lifestyle business. So Kyle, Mr. Definition Man, what is a lifestyle business?
So a lifestyle business is defined as a business set up and run by its founders primarily with the aim of sustaining a particular level of income and no more, or to provide a foundation from which to enjoy a particular lifestyle. So the main requirement of a lifestyle business is just that it allows the entrepreneur to live how they want to live now while running the company.
Right, right. So the difference here between, and we'll talk about entrepreneurial startups next week, but the difference, the main distinction here is that a lifestyle business, you're not setting out to you know, found the new Google, right? You're not setting out to start this massive company. A lifestyle business is a strategy for increased personal and financial freedom, where you work less, and your lifestyle business will be in line with your values and also your life.
Well, that seems to kind of be the sum of it, at least in some sense, right? We're done here, right? No, wait, bad joke.
No, we've got a little bit more to talk about, and I think it'd be pretty disingenuous for us to just kind of end up in the podcast there 6 minutes. Enjoy it.
Shortest episode ever. Yeah, we give you one definition, we're done. Yo, pack it up. Let's go out into the woods. Right? No, bad joke. Sorry.
All right. So I guess let's go a little more in depth here. So benefits of lifestyle businesses, obviously the flexibility. The whole purpose of lifestyle business is to end, kind of that 9-to-5 routine. Tim Ferriss, and this was referenced in both podcasts I listened to in preparation for this, but Tim Ferriss is like four-hour work week or something like that. The idea is to be very flexible with your time where you don't have to work as much. And as we discussed last week, I think, with unjobbing and freelancing, frugality and intensive saving do kind of play a role. If you're earning less money, it means that you'll have to spend less, right, to sustain your livelihood.
Yeah, that kind of seems to be the sum of it, isn't it?
Right. So the next one. You have the opportunity to make a lot of money without a college degree, without debt, with all that sort of stuff. Now, I'll mention more about this later on, but I interviewed Kevin Geary on Liberty Under Attack Radio. He's actually a lifestyle business entrepreneur, and he runs something, a website called SixFigureGrind.com. So he makes well over six figures, from his lifestyle business. And a lot of folks that are doing doing lifestyle businesses are making a lot of money. So compared to $25,000-$30,000 a year or $50,000 a year at a corporate job, you can bring in a lot of money through a lifestyle business. But again, that's not a guarantee, just as with freelancing. So anything there?
No, I mean, other than to say that, yeah, I mean, if you know, those folks and Greary too can make a go of it, then all the more power to them.
Right. So I guess compared to unjobbing and freelancing, Most lifestyle businesses are completely online, which means they are location-independent occupations. You could be on the beach in Aruba running a training seminar. You could be on your sailboat recording training videos, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, you could be on the beach in Aruba also, helping set up one of your clients' Facebook advertising campaigns. I mean, location-independent. That's kind of as you can see from the financial independence portion thus far. That is a very, very key. It plays a key role in vulnerability to coercion.
Yeah, and wasn't there that one company or whatever? Not that they paid us to like mention this, but Stateless Suites, I think it was at least a while back. Who was it? The lady or whatever who ran basically a bakery out of her house, which is technically what made it black market or something to that effect. I mean, I guess she was doing it as a lifestyle business too. You know, baking people's stuff and then, you know, basically using that to pay her bills. So.
Huh. I guess possibly. I'm not familiar with that scenario, but I suppose it could be. I don't see why not.
Although unfortunately it would not be Stateless Suites wasn't exactly location independent because, you know, she actually needed an actual place to. But then again, she was doing stuff out of her home, so I guess maybe if you run a business out of your Vanu home base, maybe your Vanu shelter, I guess maybe that could work. But I mean that's kind of the other thing too. I mean, actually, there's also this is a better example. There's a local Austinite I know who basically knits, and she then sells her custom made knitting. I think on Etsy, I think it is, or one of those kind of websites or whatever, and so that she pulls in extra money that way.
Maybe lifestyle business. I think that's something a little different. The ones I'm more familiar with. It seems like most of them are online. But anyways, lifestyle businesses do not require a lot of overhead. As I said, most of them are online. You get a website. You may pay a couple $100 for an email. Management service. You might have to pay some money for a training video platform or something along those lines. But I mean, you don't have to open up a storefront, which that's an office is very, very expensive. You don't have to hire a bunch of employees. You don't have to go through the licensing and all that sort of procedure for a lifestyle business, as far as I understand it. It doesn't require a lot of overhead, which is, good as far as financial independence, because the whole point of financial independence is to, raise that initial investment capital necessary to pursue van nomadism or minimal sailboating or whatever. So I think that's definitely a good thing.
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, basically anything that kind of reduces your business expenses is definitely something to strive for, right? Keep it a lean, mean, well-oiled machine, right?
Yeah, definitely. So I guess the last one, and this kind of goes hand in hand with the flexibility aspect, but financial freedom, and which also translates into personal freedom, because if you don't have to work as much and you can still sustain the lifestyle that you want, that's pretty huge. So lifestyle businesses can do that for Vanuans. So I guess anything else that you can think of for benefits?
If I remember correctly, wasn't that like one of the main attractive points about lifestyle businesses is that essentially you put in the initial, shall we say, investment of time, money, capital, et cetera, into actually establishing it. And then pretty much it's supposed to run more or less mostly automatically, only requiring a little bit of maintenance here and there. Wasn't that kind of like the long and the short of it?
It could be, yeah. You could, launch one product and do really good in, SEO, search engine optimization, and have new clients and customers, come through and purchase it after you've already put it together 6 months ago or whatever. So, that is possible. Or, for people who say, of a new one who works 6 months out of the year or something, like he's working for 6 months straight and he's going to take a couple of years off, he could release, four or five products. In that span of time to make more money. But yeah, I mean, you can definitely set it up to where you put out that product and, if you're selling enough of them and you're bringing in, $2,000 a month off of it, then yeah, sure. I mean, you might decide to, that's enough money and, it's going to keep selling you. You don't necessarily have to, put out a new product. But obviously, if things are going well and it's I guess as simple as I'll kind of lay out here, as Kevin explained it, then yeah, I don't know why you wouldn't come out with another product, but I guess to each his own, right?
Yeah, I suppose so.
All right, so skills you need to have for a lifestyle business, which are very similar to, I guess, just entrepreneurship in general. First off, salesmanship. You've got to be able to sell, and especially if it comes to more kind of the digital aspect, digital marketing. Got to have good sales copy to get people to read it and to get people to want to buy it. So that's kind of an obvious one. But if you're going to try to sell something to someone, you have to show the customer that it's going to bring value to their lives and that it's going to be a worthwhile investment. So, yeah, what do you got?
Well, I know that there have been some like homeschooling curricula that certain companies and individuals sell. So I guess kind of like if you package the curricula together and then market it, I mean, then at that point, you know, depending on the flow of customers you have, if it's not too much of a niche market, then I guess you could like live off the profits of that maybe. I mean, that's kind of and yeah, I guess that would be kind of location independent, at least in some sense. You know, if the actual books are either housed away from where you live and or the materials are completely digital to begin with, then yeah, I mean, I guess that could be one form of a lifestyle business that more or less just, you know, churns out profits for you once you set it up and get it running and you have a, you know, a stable enough clientele.
Sure. Yeah. I would say so. The next skill that you need to have, I guess might not be necessary if the lifestyle business you're setting up it doesn't require a whole lot of work and time, and you're at a point now where you are making enough money and you don't want your business to grow, right? You want to work the same amount of hours or less, and you don't want it to grow. Now, if you do want it to grow and you want to get to, you know, six figures or a couple $100,000 company, or not really a company, a couple $100,000 a year business, then you might have to start delegating, and this is kind of the hardest thing. I've always been worried about delegating certain aspects of LUA or TVP out to other people because I like to be in control of things. So this is one of the biggest hurdles that I've heard from other entrepreneurs is that delegating, you know, giving people other responsibilities so that you have more time for what you want to do or time spent on things that you're better suited for. So delegation is extremely, extremely important, especially if you're going to, you know, be pulling in six figures and utilizing that financial freedom and that personal freedom that you have. So, yeah, what do you got?
Oh, well, I mean, I delegate things all the time because I know I can't be in, unlike lower management at the warehouse, I know I can't be in five places at once. You know, I have to prioritize and, you know, go down my list, so to speak, and so on and so forth. So, yeah, I'm a huge fan of delegation. In fact, actually, it also means that if I delegate it to the right people and assuming that they're even halfway competent, then, you know, the quality of the work will be at least tolerable, if not better. And it also means, too, that I just have less work to do, which is awesome. So, yeah, I am like one of the biggest fans of delegation like ever. The only downside of it is if you make a bad decision and you delegate to somebody whom you shouldn't have, either because they're lazy or incompetent or fill in the blank, such as, I don't know, they're not there. You know, there's a bad idea. You're expecting someone to show up and you're delegating something to them for the day or whatever, and they just don't show up. Right. You know, yeah, I mean, so unless you make a mistake of like laziness, you know, absenteeism, laziness, or incompetency, other than that, yeah, delegation is really a good way to go. Even going back to like mainstream economics or whatever, I mean, division of labor. I mean, that's a form of delegation too.
Sure. Yeah, definitely. So another skill is management if you're going to have a team. yeah, this one's tough, you know, if you're trying to, manage people in a way for the business to be successful, there's a lot of extra things that come into play. There definitely are. So, I've never really been in that position, so that would be a struggle for me. But yeah, I mean, that's something that's that if you're going to have a team, you kind of have to, learn how to, I guess, manage the company and its employees. I guess the last skill you might need to have, or, a lot of the stuff is automated nowadays. So you might be able to, I guess, to slide by without too much of an in-depth knowledge about it. But accounting, you got to make sure that, your business is doing well. And with lifestyle business, it's pretty easy to, even without knowing the numbers specifically or tracking the numbers specifically, I mean, you launch a training seminar, you sell it, you sell it for $200. You're on a Facebook ad and you have like $500 put into it, and you end up making like three or four times that from the Facebook ad. So you're definitely ahead. But still, accounting might be a good skill to have.
I think it's an essential skill to have. I mean, hell, even at that new job I've got that I more or less just started a few weeks ago, like I'm doing math at like 3 a.m. Okay, I am literally balancing the books of all of the business activity that took place during that, well, during the business day. So, yeah, I think I can add, subtract, multiply, and divide, more or less. And then, of course, look at, like, the ledger sheets and try and, separate out certain types of business expenses from others, like the phone reports versus other ones, and then kind of, like, fill in the blanks in terms of, like, the accounting and such. So, yeah, again, if in corporate America you can do even halfway decent accounting, again, I'm not even talking about double entry bookkeeping because I still need to learn that. Actually, a fun side note, for those of you who should have read Human Action, Ludwig von Mises considered double entry bookkeeping as the greatest invention of Western civilization, which is still a skill I need to learn. But as far as like run-of-the-mill accounting goes, or balancing the books, or even just doing good old-fashioned financial audit, I mean, once you learn how to do that and do it correctly and do it right the first time, instead of having to fix someone else's, math errors, then yeah, you're well on your way to having more than enough of a skill set to run your own business at this point. I mean, hell, Shane, even of these four things we've just mentioned, the salesmanship, the delegation, management, and accounting, the only one I might be weak on would be salesmanship. The other three, delegation, management, accounting, I can do all of that stuff in my damn sleep. So, yeah, I mean, so for you folks who have at least some experience with any of that stuff, yeah, you're well on your way to already being competent enough to be a lifestyle business. And again, I work in corporate America, okay? I have seen so much backwards crap that anything that can be done to encourage entrepreneurship, like the real kind, would be awesome. So if you can delegate, you can manage, and you can account and sell, then yeah, you're well on your way. So folks, don't be intimidated by what some people might consider the entrepreneurial jitters. If you've got the skill set, you know what you're doing, and you've had to overcome obstacles by like corporate bureaucracy or whatever, then you're well on your way to doing this stuff, doing a lifestyle business and doing it right.
Sure. Yeah, I definitely agree. And as I said, for management and delegation, if it's going to be you're a one man team, those obviously aren't going to be factors there. But if you're going to try to grow the lifestyle business, then yeah, you might have to take those things into account. Now, I guess just one major mistake, and this is something that Kevin brought up in that interview I did with him on Liberty Under Attack, which I will link into the show notes. But this is a major mistake that he sees quite often. So it goes like this. The entrepreneur has an idea and is off to the races with it. They build a website, DIY style, and start putting out products or services before even building an audience. They also don't even know if there is a demand for such products or services. They may spend, 3 months putting together this really badass, service or product, and, may turn out to be a waste of time. So instead, start a Facebook group or a podcast or something. Build an audience around that subject matter and ask your potential customer, what are you having trouble with? Is there any new product or service that you would pay for if it was available? So that's a pretty major mistake. And I think we talked about that last week in the freelancing episode where, you might have some skills, but if no one wants to pay for them, then unfortunately, that's not going to work, right? If the whole idea of these is to, financial independence, if you're not making money, then it's either a hobby or it's, just a volunteer work or something like that.
Right. I mean, supply has to meet demand. And if there's no demand for a potential supply, then it's just a moot point. You know, it does take two to tango here, you know, economically speaking.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So getting started, if you are interested in starting a lifestyle business, you know, how would you go about doing so? And again, I haven't started a lifestyle business, but this is mostly information gleaned from Kevin. So number one, as I said a moment ago, ask your potential customers what it is they're having trouble with. This can be through an email subscriber list, Facebook group, et cetera. So say, for example, the audience in your entrepreneurship group says they need help with search engine optimization. I guess just another note, to build up an audience of potential customers, podcasts, blog posts, et cetera, are great to attract the right folks and can also boost you in SEO. But so the next step, start brainstorming ideas. You know, once they give you some, so they told you that, you know, they're having problems with search engine optimization. They know if they can, you know, rank higher in Google, then they can get a lot more, you know, clients. So you go back to the drawing board and you say, okay, SEO, you start brainstorming ideas. And then after you brainstorm some ideas, you return to your audience and you say, would you guys be willing to pay for, you know, this service? Here's an outline of, here's kind of what I'm thinking. And so you get their thoughts, but still don't build the course yet. People can say that they're going to pay for something down the road, but they might not when it's time to fork over the cash, right? So it's really easy to say, oh, yeah, I'd buy that until it you know, comes time to actually pay for it. So the next step, offer the course for a pre-sale at a discounted rate. For example, for $149, you'll get a live training seminar and a bunch of resources for improving your SEO. After the course is complete, the price will jump up to $399. Or after the pre-sale, after the course is complete and it's, you know, it goes to retail, the price will jump up to $399. If I get X number of pre-sales, I'll build it. If it's less than that, I won't. So this way, before you even begin working on the project, you've already been paid for it, rather than putting in a bunch of time and effort without any interest. And this also does serve as a beta test of sorts. They can help you improve the course for when you sell it at the retail rate. So you go through that. You pre-sell it, and those 100 people or however many are in the seminar, you know, they get in there and they say, you know, this was great, but you know, that part didn't help me as much as I think it did. You might need to work on that a little bit. So you can kind of get those kinks worked out, so that when you do bring it, when you do, you know, send it to retail or send it to market, it's the, you know, the top, the highest quality product or service that you can offer. So I guess just one other note on getting started, I suppose, or maybe just a side note. Own the platform that your business is on. Don't make it fully dependent on social media. They're always changing their algorithms, meaning you have to pay more to reach more folks, or you might just not reach as many folks. Or if you are a or if you are politically outspoken on Fascist Book and your page is linked to your personal account, and if you get your account shut down, it'd be a bad deal for your business. So don't put all of your eggs in one basket. And I think the positive here is that if you have an email list of thousands of customers or potential customers, you'll have your own nano economy, as P. Cisco would call it. So regardless of what Facebook or Instagram or Twitter is doing, you always have your email list, these people who are customers or potential customers. Anytime you launch a product, you can send it out to them, and you know, likely you'll have some success there if you have in the past. So I'll turn it over to you, man. What do you have?
Well, I would just say that this kind of sounds, from what you were kind of explaining, that it's more like an educational product. Is that right?
It can be. And I do have the next section, some ideas for lifestyle businesses and some that are already out there. But yeah, I mean, some of them are education. Sure. Yeah.
Okay. So so what would be an example of something that would be like a course, like you were kind of explaining, but not of an educational nature? Would it be kind of like a skills set tutorial, like how to fix your plumbing or something? I mean,
if you're going, I don't think like how to do your plumbing would necessarily fall into this. I know what you're asking though. I can go ahead and go into the one, I guess, the examples of lifestyle businesses. I'm thinking about it. I'm not sure. Most of these probably would be educational, at least to some extent. But some examples here. So health or fitness, an example being Kevin's rebooted body. which was his first lifestyle business. So, or I guess the next one that Kevin worked on, a lifestyle business, helping others start their lifestyle businesses. So that's his six-figure grind. There's digital marketing, search engine optimization, developing and programming. Well, actually, that'd be one that wouldn't be education if you're just, you know, lifestyle business of being a developer. And then there's life coaching, and then there's obviously, you know, a bunch of other ones that I haven't really thought of. So those are some examples of lifestyle businesses. And yes, most of them are education based. And the ones that I'm most familiar with are pretty much helping entrepreneurs grow their business.
Okay, so sometimes it can also, so if I'm trying to understand this right, there can be also subject matter that can be kind of like health and fitness as well.
Sure, sure. Like with Kevin's initial, and I'm not a customer of his, so I don't know exactly all that he does there. But he offered, and this is one I remember from the interview I did with him, decoding your cravings or something. So there's, you know, kind of helping you eat healthier and kind of discover the psychological aspect of why you're eating what you're eating. So he kind of does that, and I'm sure there's also, I'm positive there's also, you know, fitness stuff in there too. Hopefully that answers your question.
Okay, so there can be a range of things, and I would assume also like teaching people how to do like computer programming might also be a potential lifestyle business venture as well.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, that could go through the same, the same process that I listed earlier. Only it would be, it'd be a training. There'd be an initial training session, and then, I don't know how it all come together, but yeah, you could certainly do something like that too. I'm sure.
Okay.
Okay. So, that would be, I guess, some of the steps to starting a lifestyle business, and let's talk a little bit about how lifestyle businesses can help individuals become more invulnerable to coercion. We've talked about this quite a bit. We talked about it quite a bit in the last episode, the first episode of this mini-series in Financial Independence, that a 9-to-5 job makes you quite vulnerable to coercion, especially when it comes to withholding and all of the information necessary, you know, to, you know, become an employee. With a lifestyle business, you can avoid quite a bit of that. And as we talked about earlier, it can be location independent, which obviously, as Rayo, you know, revealed so eloquently back in the 60s, that's, you know, the mobility does help you become more invulnerable to coercion. So what do you think, man?
Well, if that's the case, I guess that's a good thing in the sense that, you know, if the bludgies were ever sicked on you, they can't actually show up to your place of business, because if it's location independent, then there's no business for them to raid, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, I guess that's one good point. The only other potential problem might be a tax liability issue, but depending on what legal interstices you're utilizing, and or, you know, how much under the radar you're flying, so to speak, that might be a non-issue. Especially if the lifestyle business is legally based out of somewhere else, not the United States, right?
So another great thing about lifestyle businesses is that, as I said earlier, you have the potential to make a lot of money. And with services like Kevin's six-figure grind, you know, you can make a lot of money in a short amount of time with just one product. You know, if all the marketing is done correctly, if there's demand for it, you can make, you know, quite a bit of money at one shot, which could free up a lot of time for your pursuit of Vanu. So I think that's another really, really interesting thing. And also, I mean, I think any possibilities outside of the normal 9-to-5 grind, that is a viable, you know, I guess a viable path for, you know, the nest egg for Vanuans. I think any possibility outside of that, removing individuals from, the first realm, economy, I suppose, would be one way of putting it. I think all of those are great options, including here, lifestyle businesses.
Well, yeah. So that's kind of an interesting point you bring up, to like what degree would a lifestyle business be part of the first realm versus the second realm, at least in some sense. And I guess maybe the answer to that question, or at least beginning to discover the answer to that question, would be along the lines of to what degree is the lifestyle business part of the white market? you know, to what degree is the lifestyle business subject to taxation, regulation, and licensure, for instance? And that would, you would really have to kind of evaluate that on a case by case basis, because I guess you could have a very first realm lifestyle business of sorts where everything is on the legal up and up and you're paying your taxes and whatever the hell else. And then concomitantly, I guess you could have a more of a second realm lifestyle business where everything is much more word of mouth, at least in some sense. I don't know. That might be, that might be an interesting question perhaps for another episode. But suffice it to say for now, the idea of a lifestyle business is very intriguing, especially if you can make it work.
Yeah, yeah. And like I, like we said last week with freelancing, I mean, the only you know, if it's you just use your creativity and your skills, and you know, the only limitation is your your creativity. So so yeah, I mean, there's a lot of possibilities out there for lifestyle businesses. I would say from I guess my viewpoint, the most profitable and viable ones at this point are more so kind of the digital marketing, kind of you know, online stuff, you know, with training seminars. And things like that. I've sat through a couple of them. One of them was a Facebook advertising, you know, seminar. It was a free one. And, you know, I guess that's another way you could do lifestyle businesses. You could do a free seminar and then try to get people to, you know, do such a good job. And they learn so much that they pay you for more. So I guess that is another possibility for your strategy in lifestyle business and launching a lifestyle business. But I mean, there are a lot of possibilities. There really, really are, and we've only scratched the surface. Yeah, so there's that. Anything else, man?
I would just really say that, you know, for those of you folks who want to give a lifestyle business a shot, don't quit your day job until you actually have, you know, at least a somewhat stable enough, you know, clientele of one kind or another, whether it be a stable set or at least a good enough flow where you can like at least pay your bills and that kind of thing. I would suggest be the benchmark. And then yes, tell your corporate whore boss to basically go you know, screw himself a new light bulb, so to speak. That's a double entendre, but it's also a reference to, you know, how many managers does it take to screw in a light bulb, right? The answer might shock you. Actually, the answer is none, because we all manage ourselves. But anyway, that's kind of where it's at. Like, don't jump off the deep end, right? Vanu is not an all or nothing thing. It, you know, you can do it in stages or phases or whatever, right? So you know, do like the side hustle, like in the evenings or whatever, and then pretty much when you're ready to really make the full transition, then yeah, go for it, and you know, God be with you, kind of thing, right?
Right, right. And yeah, I'll be honest, the lifestyle business is not the most appealing thing for me, just as my subjective value. But I do know that I'm sure there are some folks here that already have, you know, some of the skills for the ideas that were laid out earlier. And I mean, as long as the marketing is good and the product's good, you know, there's a lot of demand for kind of the digital, like the digital lifestyle businesses. And there are just so many. You know, if you make a go of it and it's successful, I mean, it's a pretty incredible thing. So I guess there's that. Anything else, man?
No, just looking forward to the next episode.
Right on. So yeah, this is the shortest, other than maybe conclusions or introductory episodes, this might be the shortest one we've ever done.
Ooh,
it's really a bad thing.
Can we give ourselves an award? I want to give myself an award. The award of awards, called the award. Weren't the Oscars supposed to be happening soon or some such thing? That part of the Serval Society or whatever? Somebody at work was mentioning about that. Yeah, I don't know either. Somebody at work was mentioning about the Oscars coming up soon. I wouldn't know. It's like, yeah, I don't watch any of your movies anyway, so.
Well, that was random.
Well, of course it was a little bit random. I'm sorry. Figure that might as well for
just
the
had a random thought. Hey, you know when the Oscars is? During the Vanu podcast.
Well, yeah, because it's also kind of irrelevant in some ways. It's like, yeah, that's part of your Serval Society where Hollywood basically gets to like slap itself on the back, right?
Yeah, that's That's definitely true. That's definitely true. So we've got two more episodes in this financial independence series, entrepreneurial startups, and then, oh, what was the last one, Kyle? Do you remember off the top of your head?
No.
Okay. It's entrepreneurial startups and intensive saving.
Saving. Yeah. Yep. There we go.
The next one will be entrepreneurial startups, and then the final one will be intensive saving. Definitely two more great episodes coming up, and that's all we have for you. Please consider subscribing to the Vonnie Podcast on Patreon for numerous subscriber-only benefits. That is patreon.com/Vonnie. You can also make one-time donations via PayPal or with digital currencies. Just visit vonniepodcast.com/donate to do so. And that's all we have for you, and we'll talk to you next week. We'll be right back.